Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of today's episode, episode 51, is Father Bob Craig. Father, thanks for being here.
Oh, Joe, it's a pleasure to be with you as always. Always enjoy our conversations.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you. So Father Bob is a man of great wisdom, of great faith. He was ordained in 1972 to the Cleveland Catholic Diocese and retired in 2018 after 46 years as an active minister in a parish, I guess would be the best way to put that. So Father, originally looking back, who influenced you to join the priesthood?
I would say there were two priests, Joe, both of whom have passed away. One was Father Tony Zipp, died in 2009, and the other was Father Norm Riley, who was at Holy Name Parish where I grew up, and that was his first assignment. And Norm died around 9-10 years ago. Those two influenced me the most.
What was it about them, Father, that you would say?
I think it was just their joy in the priesthood, their interest in me. Actually, Norm taught me how to play handball, and I used to play a lot of that. And Tony just always, Tony graduated from Holy Name High School where I did, and so there was a common bond there. And then he came back to the school and was teaching, and we kind of got to know each other at Holy Name. But I think it was their joy that they had in the priesthood and their willingness just to be there for anybody.
It's beautiful. I feel like when you see someone living something that looks good, right, we get intrigued by that.
Yeah, you know, I have a saying, Joe, and you and I have talked about this. There's some people, you feel it's like a privilege to be in their presence. And it's just a privilege to be in their presence. So, and I think that's how I always saw it, was a privilege to be in Norm and Tony's presence always.
Amen. Yeah, well, that's you too, Father. So thanks. Thanks again for being here.
My first pastor has had a great influence, Jim Grandillo. He too has passed away. And, you know, when you're ordained, and I was in 72, it was right after Vatican II. And of course, we had all this new theology that we were just going to spring on the people and save the world in 6 months. And, there's a lot of arrogance that comes with that, thinking you know it all and theology is going to save the world. But Jim had the patience to put up with me and all of my youthful, newly ordained arrogance. And I remember about a year or two after I left Holy Redeemer in Collinwood, I called Jim up. And it's not that we were at battle or anything, but I said, Jim, we have to have dinner. And I, at that point in time, I said, I got to apologize to you everything, for putting up with me with all of my newly ordained wisdom at that time, you know. But he had a great influence in developing my priesthood. And he's one of the few at a funeral that I really had tears during his funeral because he taught me a lot. That's again, cool. Just by who he was.
Yeah. Yeah, he lived it, right? Like those people that actually walked the walk.
Right, right.
It's incredible to see that. Father, at that young age, what gave you the strength to maybe put aside other visions that you had for your life, whether that was marriage and a family to an earthly woman, I suppose, as opposed to the church, and let you join the priesthood? What gave you that strength?
Well, people like yourself, Joe, and I can say people with faith.
Okay.
I came out again thinking that we had all the answers. And I'll never forget, and I think in one of our lunches I shared this with you, but it was, it was a woman in her 90s that the family asked that I bring them communion, bring their mother, grandmother communion. She was passing away. And I remember they took me up to her bedroom, and I just walked into her room, and she was like, almost comatose, not very much even looking. Her, you know, her mouth was open. Yeah. And I actually forget her name, but it was whatever it was. I said, Maria, I brought you communion. And Joe, like that, her eyes opened. and she smiles.
It's incredible.
And I gave her communion and blessed her in the sacrament of the sick, talked to her family a little bit. And then as I was leaving, Holy Redeemer was in Collinwood. That was my first assignment, an Italian parish. They sent a Polack to an Italian parish. And so I was walking, it's probably about 300 feet down the street, walking back to the parish. And I said, you know, that woman has more, knows more about God and theology than you do with all your Vatican II theology. And people, and you may have heard me preach about this at St. John Newman, it's people's faith. And a lot of guys will tell you this. It's people's faith who keep them a priest. People who are struggling in their marriage and somehow still believe in the power of God, still believe in the Eucharist, still believe in a community of believers to find strength. People whose, one in particular comes to mind, who lost two teenage sons in tragic ways, and yet they believe in the Eucharist. They believe in community, and they would come to church and carry on the work of the Lord. I can go on and on and on and on about people's faith that keeps you a priest, keeps me a priest. And I've just found that in every parish, even in retirement. It's amazing the fantastic people in this Diocese of Cleveland. I felt that way about St. John Newman and all my assignments. St. John Newman, as you know, I was pastor the last 28 years from 1990 to 2018. But every place I help out at in retirement since 2018, I have just found unbelievable, awesome faith. And especially, it's from young to old.
Yeah.
I see it a lot in the elderly as they face getting older, health issues, but their faith is just rock-like. You can't bust it.
Those are the stories that give me chills. I'm often inspired likewise by that. I can picture this gentleman who a lot of times I'm out of Holy Rosary for Mass, and he'll come in, and usually the Mass has started, and he'll come in there, and he is not very mobile, and he comes in alone, and he has an oxygen tank in one arm and a cane in the other with the four prongs, and he's hobbling in there, and I'm like, this is the guy that deserves to be 2 minutes late to Mass, not me, right? And it makes you question it. Again, the way that we think of ourselves, I guess, from that arrogance perspective that you talked about earlier, but also just that rock solid faith of someone like that who's willing to do what they need to do to get to Mass. That commitment of faith is second to none.
Yeah, there's a story told, as you probably have heard it, about a man who came to church every day, and he just all day sat in church, and finally a priest went up to him and said, is there anything going on in your life that I could help you with? You're here every day. And the man just said, no, I just sit here and I let God talk to me, you know.
Wow. Father, it kind of taps into a thought for me. I often think that we turn to God in really great moments and offer him thanks, or we turn to God in moments like that where someone would assume we're at an all-time low and we need help. How do we transition from God just being a soundboard into more of a relationship? Because Tom Brady, who I know you love and adore as well, often referenced being a quarterback, kind of like how I think we look at God. And that is, Brady always said that as a quarterback, when things went really well, you gave out thanks. And when things went poorly, you took the blame as the quarterback. And I feel like that's God, right? God's like, all right, so you come to me when things are really great and you get the, you know, you give me thanks. And then when things are going poorly, you come to me as well and you're aggravated and you want me to help you get out of it. So I feel like, how do we bridge the gap between him being God, just being a soundboard, and then actually having a relationship like this gentleman in that story that you describe, who is able to talk with God and hear him?
I would imagine the gentleman in the story, the gentleman you described with the oxygen tank and a cane, I imagine they have gone through a lot of peaks and valleys in their lives. And I don't know if there's a 5-step, 10-step, 12-step program to this is how now you can live with God. I think it was Gandhi, it might not have been Gandhi, it was somebody else who said, how does it go? For everything that has been in my life, thank you. For everything that will be in my life, yes. And you develop this attitude of giving thanks to God daily. That's where I'm at in my life. Plus having good people in your life that you can talk over your faults and your failings with. When I was going through what I was going through when I was ordained, as I shared earlier, I was lucky to have a Tony Zip in my life, a Norm Riley in my life, that basically, in a very gentle, loving, peaceful, calm way, would say, you're depending on yourself too much. Do you really have prayer in your life? Do you see how God is speaking to you through this woman who is dying, but can smile that she's receiving the Eucharist? So, in some ways, Joe, I think it's having people around you, people who aren't afraid to admit their failings to you, that give you strength. I think it's daily praying for the grace of God in your life to be open to His presence. Being silent in prayer. Letting God speak to us. I'm sure you have. Your grandparents have been married how many years?
Forever.
Forever.
Yeah, they were 20. So,
they've been married, 60-some years probably. Yeah. And I'm sure over the course of that marriage, especially 50, 55, 60 years, you have seen them just sit with each other. And they don't say a word. But there's a love there that you can feel. And it's because they just have learned to accept each other, love each other, forgive each other. I know one of the things that Tony brought out to me was you can't take yourself seriously.
Yeah.
I think we have to learn to see the love of God in our life. What destroys a lot of the relationships with God is, I think, we often see ourselves as a sinner. We've been taught that. Or sometimes people think they're a sinner, and what they've done, how can God ever forgive them? We can get back to it later, but I see that in a lot of the work in my retirement that I've done with drug and alcohol addicts, which I have loved and enjoyed doing fifth step with them and just listening to them. But so many of them can't accept the fact that they're good people, that they wouldn't have been created if God didn't love them and if God didn't believe in them, if God didn't think they could contribute to this earth, to the lives of others. And to try to help them understand that amidst the addiction they have to drinking and drugs is very challenging. But you mentioned the word relationship with God in your question, which I know I've been talking a lot about, what was the question again?
I think you nailed it. To kind of dial it even back to just the basics, Father, why is faith essential to a fruitful life?
Why is what?
Faith essential, yeah. Because I feel like we're in a society now that is introverted in the sense that everyone knows everything, given the power of a phone that can tell you anything fact-wise that you would want to know. So why is faith, which you're not going to be able to Google and find fact-based, so important for a fruitful life?
I can say from my life, Joe, I guess eventually you find out and believe, or you find out through, again, good spiritual direction, that you don't have the answers to life. And actually, the answers come from a relationship with God. And I don't think it's that where you Google it, God, what is the answer to this? It's, they say God, I forget what saint said it, I really forget. But they say God speaks to us in the experiences of our life.
Amen to that.
And a number of spiritual writers have said there's no coincidences in life. Excuse me. But God, it's God being anonymous in our lives. There's no coincidences. And I think you answered the question yourself. If we really believe that God speaks to us in the experiences of our lives, our faithfulness, our lack of faith sometimes, our joys, our sorrows, our sadness through other people, then how do we incorporate that into a world that often communicates through a phone, punching numbers, punching text out? Are we really having experiences with others? And often we're not. And often, excuse me again, things that upset us and get us angry, we spew out on, and you know all the vehicles of communication much more than I do, Facebook or whatever. We can just, without any accountability, call people names, tell them they're crazy, they don't know what they're talking about. Why is there all this anger? Because we're really not dealing with it. We're just spewing it out, which can be helpful, but it's got to be to a person that is not afraid to tell you, I think you need to look at it this way, or have you looked at it another way? Or are you thinking of yourself? Or like Tony Zepp told me, you're taking yourself too serious. We're only here for a little while.
Yeah.
And it goes by quick. But one of the things I wanted to get back to, again, your original question about the relationship with God. I have found this in retirement, more in retirement. Maybe it's because you got more time, but although you're busy, but busy in a different way in retirement.
Sure.
I have just found that my prayer right now is just gratitude, Joe. I just, I look at my life and how lucky I've been, how blessed, not lucky. God's been there in many anonymous ways. I had a great family, great parents, a wonderful sister. My parents, my mom came from 10 siblings, my dad from 9. So I obviously had a lot of aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
Many wonderful cousins. I was able to play sports. I know it doesn't mean a lot to you or others. I was able to play accordion in Polish polka bands.
That's great.
I had great friends, priesthood, all of my assignments, culminating in the 28 years as pastor at St. John Newman there in Strongsville. What a blessing, and all the people of faith that I met in all those years is just unreal. That kept me a priest.
Sure.
I would be lying if I said there were not times in my priesthood or I wondered if this was for me or not. And there were challenges, but I had great friends that talked to me about that. And so right now, honestly, when I pray, I do believe in formal prayer, like the rosary. Priests are asked to pray the breviary every day, morning prayer, night prayer, evening prayer, etc. But I like to just spend time quietly every day, and I just sit there. And all I say is thank you. Let me share the blessings you have given me in my life with others, however that may be. And to me, that's a great way to pray. But it's that relationship. It's a process. I expect all of us to begin thinking we know it all. We have all the answers. We're going to save the world. But then you find out there's people smarter than you and have more faith than you.
Yeah. Amen. I feel like it's there's always a bigger fish, right? It's so yeah. true. And there's a sense of humility that I think is keen with the faith.
Through all of the blessings that you describe, people are involved in every way, whether it's from sports or the accordion. Of course, you need the band members to have the band and your friends and the faith and all of that. Through your priesthood, you've encountered thousands of people. Have you found that there's a universality amongst people? Are there certain wants, certain needs that we all have, or what is it that binds all of us together as people?
If I were to answer that, Joe, not if, I'm going to answer.
Okay.
What I see out there.
Yeah.
I think the common thread that unites us all is we're looking for peace. We're looking for that rock in our life that we know is always there. We're looking. I don't think anybody likes to be angry. I don't think anybody enjoys calling a person another name. It's an expression of anger. But we're all looking for love. We're all looking for compassion. We're all looking at ourselves. I shouldn't carry this grudge with me. I shouldn't carry revenge. We're not at peace. Look how you know friends of yours as I do, who in the last 2 months were good friends, but they haven't spoken to each other since the election. And they carry that around with them. You know, they don't like that. They want to be at peace. They want to be in a relationship. And to me, the ultimate relationship where everything comes from, where we really see what is love, what is forgiveness, what is peace, what is compassion, it comes from God, who gave us his son, Jesus. That's what I see as a common bond. We're all looking to be happy.
I could see that, especially placing such a presence, creating a godlike figure of whatever it is that's causing us anger, right? Like to use your example of the election, by placing that on such a pedestal, we then can be angry because that will never be what brings us peace in the first place. So then, especially when it doesn't go the way that you would want for whomever's angry, you're going to feel all the more less peace, as opposed to placing the trust of peace and expecting peace from a place that could actually give it, in your words, a relationship with God. I definitely can see that.
And then that goes back to Jill, to what you were saying about our relationships are expressed through the phone. We don't have a chance to say, I need help. We don't have a chance sometimes to say, because we're so busy on the phones, hey, would you pray with me? I really need some help. And I think part of that is the world we live in. We just finished the holidays. On December 26th, what did you see in stores? Valentine cards.
Yeah, right.
You know, on February 15th, what are you going to see? St. Patrick's Day cards.
By 4th of July.
Yeah, and it's Easter. We're always being pushed to live in the future, not in the present, to see where God is speaking to me right here, right now. And again, to me, you need that community and fellowship with other people. You need mentors.
Tying that all in, you have worked as a mentor with people in the addiction space who clearly are looking for that rock, right? I would imagine they need something that is a rock to guide them. Because I feel like for many people who are struggling with addiction, the consistent thing in their life is exactly that, is the addiction. Now, you had written The Way of the Cross for Those in Recovery, which is clearly a testimony to your passion and involvement in that community. Why that space, Father?
Why that what?
Why that space? Why dive into that space for you?
That's a good question, Joe. I don't know. when I was, what would have been second year theology, which would have been before Moses crossed the Red Sea, 1969 to 70, I was assigned to a parish, and it was in Bedford. And I remember meeting one of the teachers or someone out there, and he was an AA. And he just asked me one night, he said, "Father, you know, you might be learning a lot teaching PSR and that." He said, "Would you like to come?" He said, "I'm an alcoholic, and would you like to come to an AA meeting?" And I said, "Sure." And I was so impressed by these people at the meeting. They were, first of all, joyful. They made you feel like it was their privilege to have you in their presence. They would introduce themselves, "Hi, I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic." They were real.
Yeah.
And I just kind of fell in love with that person who would do that. And then when I heard the, I guess they call it the lead at that AA meeting, this person described how he had fallen away from God, how he had messed up his life, lost his wife, lost his children, and how he had been sober now for 15, 20 years. I just was moved by that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Kind of like the lady who, yeah, I want to receive communion even though I'm dying.
Right.
And so I did my, we had to write a thesis when we graduated from the seminary or for the degree, whatever we got a degree, and I can't even remember. I wrote it on counseling the alcoholic. And throughout the years, every time I met one, I was just, "Tell me your story.
Yeah.
You got so much to tell me. You have a lot of wisdom." And then the day I retired, or the day I announced my retirement, about 6 months in November of 17, to the parish, for some reason I said, "What I'm going to be doing is da da da, and then I'd like to get involved in working with drugs and alcoholics." Next day I got a call from somebody and said, "We're starting the Mulhall Center. We would like to know if you'd want to help out." And that's how that came about.
No coincidences.
And it's one of those coincidences that how God speaks to you. And I do now more fifth step than go down there as much as I used to. But it's one of those things that can lift you up, and you can also get very downtrodden. Because a lot of guys, I remember, Joe, the first day the guy in charge said, "Father, you're going to have your heart broken here." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And he said, "You're going to get involved with people's lives. You're going to come here, and all of a sudden they're back on the streets." And that was so true. I stopped in one day and was just kind of shooting the breeze with the guys about the Browns or whatever it was. And I said, "Oh, where's so-and-so?" And he said, "Father, he's back on the streets." And I thought he was making so much progress, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want to say one other thing, Joe, going back, and I wanted to say this before, about where we are in the world with people. And I have a very good friend of mine who was telling me about her husband. I shared this with you in the past, about her husband has the beginning stages of dementia and is starting to forget things. And she went to a workshop for only, I think it was, 6 people. And she said it was fantastic. And for me, it was one of the most awesome illustrations I ever heard. But they had her, after a talk and things like that, they put, again, I'm paraphrasing all of this.
Sure.
They put earmuffs on her. They gave her glasses that you could barely see out of. You were like, your eyes were all over the place. They gave her these things to walk in that hurt. And And then they put her in a room, each one in an individual room. And then he put these gloves on her that were like boxing gloves. And then they gave the instructions through the earphones and she couldn't hear them. It was like, what are they saying? And then they were asked to pick up a pen and write something. And she couldn't grab it with her hand with the boxing gloves. And her feet were hurting her, you know. And all of that was coming to her. She could barely see. And the purpose of it was to let them know how your loved one is feeling, that they can't understand everything anymore, to develop compassion. And we kind of live in this world that it revolves around me. I'm the victim, you know. You're in my way. But it taught her, she said, how to walk in another person's life that's totally different than us or undergoing things like dementia. It was a fantastic. I said, that's the greatest example I've ever seen of God coming to live with us.
100%.
Yeah,
it's totally just diving into someone's journey. And I feel like that's what makes maybe you so successful in a space where people are really struggling, is that you're willing to listen and you're willing to dive into that story with them. Like you just mentioned, the first thing that you do when you enter that space of addiction is tell me your story. Just break it down with me, right? I mean, just like any of us would, right? It's just kind of like you're at the bar, just talking to somebody. Maybe a bad example, but you're out somewhere with friends and...
You're 100% right, Joe.
Yeah.
One of the first guys I met at the Mulhall Center, I said, I always asked, you know, how old you were when you started and how did you get into drugs or alcohol? And he said, Father, every day, I was 13 years old, but he said, every day, he said, one day my dad told me he hated me, but he said, Father, it was every day. He told me every day he hated me. And I just thought of my roots, of how blessed I am to have had the parents I've had, people in my life. And to be told by your father every day you hate him.
Right.
He said, that's why I started. In fact, that's the one who then left that I...
broke your heart, clearly. Yeah.
The guy in charge said, you're going to have your heart broken here.
How do you manage to try and help these individuals find hope?
I would say the first thing is what we've been talking about, Joe. You just said it a couple of minutes ago. Many of them have never had anyone to tell their story to. And I want to listen to them, you know. Fifth step, if you're familiar with it, they confess or they share with you all the people they've hurt in their life. And they ask forgiveness of that. And a lot of them will mention anger. But to listen to that, to let them know what they're saying has value, you know, that you are important. And I think, again, it's to come with the... not that you had the answers. If anybody's going to lead them back to a wholesome life, it's God.
Oh, yeah, right.
Obviously. Not me or any other counselor or anybody. It's the grace of God. And so my role with them was to open them to the grace of God. I often use the example that when we're created, there are billions and billions of possibilities. Billions. And for some reason, we came about. We were one of those billions. Why didn't God allow number two to come about instead of you? Because he believed in you. What you're doing, you have goals in your life. God believes you can really touch people and to bring God to other people. And that's why we're on this earth. That's what we celebrated at Christmas. I know we say it's the birth of Jesus, and it is. And we need to hear that when we're growing up, to see the manger scene and everything like that. It's how we learn. But it was what we're really celebrating is that God came into our lives. Picture that.
Right.
Why did God do that? Out of love.
As we've been talking today, Father, I can't help but think about the words that we're using to describe just all of this, right? Like talking about our relationships with people, talking about our relationships with God, and we're talking about hope, grace, peace, love, compassion, listening to people, a validation from that, a rock, stability, something that's steadfast. All of these adjectives, if you just listed these adjectives like I'm doing now, and that was it, and didn't describe what it was about, everyone on this earth would say, I want that. Like whatever that thing is that you're describing, I'm in. So what is it then that deters us or lets us fall off the beaten path from that thing which we are describing as faith, a relationship with God, and good relationships with others? Where do we falter?
It's a good question, Jill. I don't know if there is one answer. I think we mention our world always moves us ahead. A lot of our advertising is just do it. Be the person you want to be, those kind of things. And it's so easy to trust yourself. It's so easy to fall into temptation. I know in the messiness of my life, maybe it's not so much what the cause is, but when we're all subject and prone to those things, we don't seek help. And we become so individualistic that we can fix our own problems. But it's having that person in your life that you can say, I feel like a piece of garbage right now. Why? And as you talk it out, you see the messiness of your life that you have to deal with. But I don't know if we want to admit we need help in our world today. And we could talk about this. They could talk about, as you all know, people talk about technology. Well, technology, there's a lot of good in it too. It saves people's lives, as you all know. But there is a danger to it. Everything has this, you know, good and bad to it. But how do we deal with that in our lives? And who's our support system? Who's our rock? What's the roots of our life? So many people, I think, believe when they were born, the world started. You know, and you know, we've had all this thousands of years before us.
Yeah.
So
I like to use the word messiness because I think it taps into the humanity that we all have. And part of the humanity is that there's degrees to it and there's things at which we're better at doing than others. And in that is that there's messiness because there's room for error. And I think it's those moments when we err that we deter from all those great things that we aforementioned. I mean, you think of individuals who have been Herculean in their own fields. I think of Kobe Bryant, who comes to mind, right? No one would say that he was anything but stellar as a basketball player and clearly had a terrible demise, but showing the frailty and the humanity of that is so, you know, evident to me, right? And he was doing great things. So it's interesting then that like the parts that make us human are also the parts that allow us to falter from all of those great qualities that we talked about.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I think it's in that messiness that we find God. If we have someone to discuss it with, I think our messiness sometimes is where God is speaking to us, you know? And, but again, if we don't have anybody to bounce it off of, we're trying to do it ourselves. It's not a good thing, you know?
How do we ask for help?
I think we ask for it.
Yeah. Just do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's got to be a trust level, sure.
Okay.
I don't walk out of here and say, hey, I need some help. You know, I want to,
yeah.
I'm going to open up to you my inner life to you. No, it's someone that you have grown with, you can trust, and as we were saying earlier, we know we're not happy. So are we going to walk around this earth not happy or try to open ourselves to what is there in our lives, the beauty that is there, to the gifts and talents that we have. I think that's another thing. We know we could be doing so many things, but we're not using our gifts and talents. And to have people maybe, I don't know where I developed what I was saying about my prayer and always just thankfulness every day, but I'm sure it was talking with the wisdom people of my life that helped me. All of a sudden it's there. But I think that only comes when you spend each day with the Lord in prayer, silent prayer. But how do you ask for help? It's a good question. I think you do it. But I think it's a process in life where you come to realize it might be for some of the alcoholics and that it's wrapping a car around a pole. That's it. Oh my God, what have I done with my life? Yeah. For some, it was a divorce. Their wife left them. And I remember one in particular, he said, my kids now don't have my last name. They have my wife's, my divorced wife's husband's, present husband's last name. They said, that bothers me. That was something that just woke me up.
Yeah, that would light a fire. Right? I mean, like, I'm aggravated for him. Yeah.
But so it's just different things, to have that experience of the late. And then other things that happen in those first 3 to, and ongoing, as I said, the faith of people to... I'm blessed to have the gift of priesthood where I see the faith of people. And I could be here all day giving you examples of that.
The ones that you have mentioned are, again, have brought chills to me, and I'm sure our audience abroad can agree with that. It is those moments, and I think it calls upon an important thought that we ought to, kind of like George Strait said, I know you're a country music fan, like, look for God, right? And it's when we take a step back that we can see him and just recognize him in all the various aspects of our lives. There was another guest who was on one time who mentioned to me that that's exactly what he does. He's like, I literally sit down once a week and just start going on a piece of paper with all the things that he's grateful for. Just boom, boom, boom. And he's like, next thing you know, 20 minutes have gone by and I'm pages upon pages upon pages. And he said, for whatever reason, for him, that's really effective. And he likes to do it in a week span because it's endless how many things then that he's grateful for. And we've been talking about it, but concretely, one of the pillars that I believe as we dive into our closing litany here is that gratitude is a pillar for making people happier. I think people who live a grateful life are happier than those who do not, just point blank. And you've talked about the role of gratitude in your life. So typically I would ask that, but you've touched on it. So I'm going to shift it a little bit. How would you advise someone, or what piece of wisdom would you share with someone who wants to start being more grateful for recognizing God in their life? Because I think those are synonymous.
One of the things, Joe, that might be a springboard for that is, you just mentioned it within the last minute, and I forget who said it. I think it was Chesterton, but he said, the world is not lacking wonders in life. But what it is lacking is wonder. And I think you alluded to not being able to see everything. And it's not that we're lacking wonders, as he said, but we're lacking wonder. And how do we develop gratitude? I keep coming back to it, Joe. I'm going to say it again. We have to be involved with people's lives. When we see sorrow, we try to help them. Like right now, all the people trying to help out in California, they want to do something with those fires. I mean, down deep, I think all of us care for one another. We've had experiences in life. And maybe, to pray, if I were to say anything, to pray for that gift of gratitude. Because I don't think we leave here or we leave any context and say, I got to do more of this, more of that, less of that. I think it's the grace of God we need to pray for. Lord, let me be thankful. And I might be naivete or it might be simplistic, but But I think it's every day just praying for that grace. And as I often tell people, you can't let a day go by without thanking God for your blessings and thanking God for his forgiveness in your life. I know I got to do that every day. Thank God for my blessing and certainly his forgiveness. But it's being open and realizing you're not going to do it by yourself. We just can't. That's why God came among us.
Mm-hmm. That notion of forgiveness and gratitude go hand in hand, again, to nail it on the head of that frailty of the human experience. Like, I think part of that desire for people to be doing better than like experiencing a wildfire is recognition of that could be me, right? I mean, that could have been any of us if we were out there, for example. There's nothing that these people did that led for their houses to be burning down. And it's like, wow, God, like, I'm thankful that I've never experienced that, right? And then you pray alternatively, like, man, you want the betterness for them. I think by recognizing that frailty again of our own existence, then we can see also how greatness comes into our life through God's blessings, like what that looks like for us, because it could be either or.
I like what you said, the frailty of our existence that helps us recognize there's a power greater than us. You said we are coming to the end here, but there was one experience that really helped me. My mom died in 03, March of 03, and I remember in November of 02, driving back from the Holy Family Cancer Home where she was. And it was one of those bitter, cold November nights, high 30s, low 40s, terrible rain coming down, could barely see. And beside having tears in my eyes, I just said, I can't drive in this. And I pull off to the side of the road. And I just grabbed the steering wheel. And what I told God I would scandalize you with if I repeated what I said to God about my mom dying and everything. But it was really funny. When I got done, believe it or not, a rainbow appeared. But I never felt so free and so close to God, even though I had just told him what I think of him. But it was that ability, for some reason, God giving me the strength to say how I feel to God. And I think sometimes we feel we have to have the right words, the right prayer, got to write a beautiful dissertation to God about what's going on in my life. But it's being real, just being yourself.
That's the best way to do it. It's the only way to do it, I guess.
And then, like I said, I just felt God's presence more than I ever did. And again, that's another step in the process of, I'm not in this alone.
Yeah, and he kind of takes you as you are, you know? And it's this whole notion that we don't have to put up this front as if God wouldn't know anyway, right?
I mean, exactly. And I think sometimes we talk to God and God, when we get done, God says, who is this? This isn't who I created. Why are you trying to impress me? I know who you are. Just come to me.
I think that experience, it reminds me, I was at a CYO training to coach CYO basketball, and this training was so verbose. Golly. As I'm sure you know, the diocese can do with drawing things out. I'm allowed to say that. You don't have to comment on that, but
I won't.
The training was so long, and I'm sitting there. I was getting bored. I was so bored, and I'm looking around, and I'm thinking to myself, this is freaking boring, you know? And sure enough, the person speaking gives the most extraneous example that had seemingly nothing to do with coaching high school boys CYO basketball, but it struck home with me. And I looked, and I kind of was jarred. I remember thinking, I'm like, you know what, God? That's a good one. I'm like, that's pretty good. You got me. You know, it's like, I remember telling him just like that, again, with probably things that wouldn't be best to put out there. I'm like, what is that? That was the most obscure example, but we got my attention. Fair enough.
There's a speaker I heard on a retreat once. I might have shared this with you, but his name was James Finley. I'm not sure if he's living anymore, but he spoke for 45 minutes, his opening talk. Then they had the microphone. First person to get up says, James, I don't know what the hell you just said the last 45 minutes, but he said, I felt a presence of the sacred in your life, and I sensed the divine.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just being himself talking, you know? So.
Father, on the alternative, do you have any regrets in your life? And I'm especially curious for how these regrets tie in with faith.
I have always said this, Joe. I think there's a couple parts to this.
Sure.
I think the mistakes I have made and any of us make a lot, help us or form us to be who we are today. If, as I've been saying, we have people in our lives, we can talk to them about what's happened. So in one sense, I don't have regrets because some of the stupid things I did, some of the early days of priesthood when I had all the answers, some of the arrogance of the early days, they've helped form me to be who I am today, who recognizes there's so much growth that is still needed in your life, you know? So, but if I were to say there's a regret, it would be, I wish life wasn't a process. That what, you know, what did Mark Twain say? I didn't realize how smart my dad was until I turned 21, you know, something like that. Life is a process. And you've got to let go from one stage to another. I can't play sports like I used to today. I could never keep up with you on the basketball court. That was one time part of my life, or the tennis courts. But I got to let go of that, because I really believe every part of our lives, whether it's middle age, growing up, senior living, adults, that there's always new people and new experiences in our life that God is leading us to. But you got to let go. And, you know, we talked about the anger. I think there's so much anger because we don't let go. We want to still be who we were in our teens, our 20s, our 30s.
Sure.
But yet there's new experiences God is calling us to. A person I'm very close to, she's been debating whether to sell her house and move into independent senior living. I've told her, I said, if you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And I said, you're very active and involved in things, but look at all the new people and new situations you're going to find yourself involved with. And it's something she has to do. She's been putting it off.
But yeah,
you know, I wish life wasn't a process. But on the other hand, that's how you grow, and it's the fun of life. It's the joy of life.
It is. Yeah, it's the various experiences.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would all be the same, and homogeneity is boring.
Right.
So I understand that. It's really good. I'm going to be pondering that. It's one of those I'm going to be pondering after this episode's done and we go our separate ways. I'm going to continue to be thinking about that. My final question to you, well, I have two. My first one is kind of ironic, but I think it's really great to have something on the calendar to look forward to, just because I think it provides a sense of joy. It's something like, you know what? Like, I know that's going to be awesome. Like, I know I get to do this thing that's out of the ordinary. What is on your calendar that you are looking forward to?
I don't know if it's one event, Joe. I think it's more, I'm at that stage in my life where what I'm looking forward to, or I don't know if, I think I'm looking forward to it eventually, is meeting God. I've met a lot of great people on this earth. As long as I'm here, I think God has things for me to do. But I know the day is coming where probably could be any time for any of us.
Sure.
But certainly within the next 5 to 10 years, I just don't know if I'll be here. And I have to be realistic about that and say, I'm going to meet God. That's what I've hopefully lived my life for.
Yeah.
I believe God has forgiven me and helped me through my messiness, through my hard times, the challenges of priesthood, those times where I wondered if I wanted to be a priest. I'm so thankful he put people in my life to keep me a priest. But I think it's a great thing to, it's going to be a great experience. Does that mean I'm looking forward to it? No, I always say, I hope it's after football season that he calls me, you know. Like if it's next year, I hope it's after February 9th, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But no. And so once we get to training camp, I say, you can't be now until February.
Yeah, you got to wait, yeah. Sorry, God, it's my time.
I mean, there's things on my calendar, you know, I'm looking forward to, or vacations and things, but I think when you get into the whole atmosphere and of life, it's, let's face it, are we going to look forward to meeting God?
Yeah, that's the ultimate look. I mean, that's the ultimate calendar right there.
Yeah.
When we stop,
you know, I'm in an era, Joe, where just in the last 2 months, three priests of my era have died. And, you know, we go to the funeral last week, a priest, Father Ned Weiss, great guy, wonderful priest. He was a very big influence on my life. He was my spiritual director for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of us, our era, we look around the room and we say, we're all in line for this, but we don't know where.
Sure. Sure. That's powerful. It's a great reminder too, and a great recognition. And it allows us to go day by day, just trying to be the best that we can to exemplify that humility. Last question to you, Father. As we close up here, do you have any piece of advice or any wisdom that you would like to share with a specific audience that you could tailor towards or just the audience abroad?
I think we've said it, Joe. Be yourself. Allow yourself to be part of a Christian community where you have people, where you can develop friendships and relationships with people that you can trust. Don't worry about prayer, but as once many spiritual writers say, most important thing about prayer is showing up every day. Don't worry about whether it's good prayer or bad prayer. Am I pleasing God? Am I saying the right words? But just show up every day. Know you're going to be distracted, but God can deal with your distractions. And be open to the very anonymous ways God speaks to you.
That was beautiful. That was perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I would love to go through that list again about hope, about trust, about peace, about joy, about grace. I mean, that's five where I just rattled off. And again, I think when we look at these adjectives of steadfast, of being a rock, of strength, of trust, these are all words that we all would love to experience in our life. So I think given our conversation today, it's always worth debating, questioning, diving into. Father Bob, I can't thank you enough for joining episode 51 of Chats with Clark. It is an absolute pleasure to have you and just to converse with you, as I know we have done ample times before, but to get it on conversation and get it recorded for our audience. To our audience, if you have not already, hit the subscribe button, drop us a follow, share with someone who needs to hear this episode. This community is what it is because of all of the listeners and because of our special guests. So thank you for tuning in. This has been episode 51 of Chats with Clark. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off. Until next time.